This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
The program is brought to you by Carol Cox.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Another beautiful day right here in Honolulu, and I will never complain. Anyway, I have some guests that's coming in later on, and we're going to be talking about some of the issues related to last week's discussion on Robin Danner, the Helen Y. issue. But here, I have two people. One's an attorney, and another is owner or director, president of Hawaii Owner Solutions, Mr. Courtney Brown, and Ms. Melody Aduha, attorney. And basically, I'll give you a little background on them before they get in. And, Courtney Brown is known as a foreclosure expert. He is a certified securitized forensic auditor and mortgage loans. Prior to coming to Hawaii in 1989, he developed apartment, townhouse, and home projects in Phoenix, Arizona. He also owned a part of a commercial real estate brokerage company, specializing in real property exchanges and income-producing properties. In 2003, Courtney Brown became involved in the wholesale property business. He came across homeowners who were facing foreclosure but are able to keep their homes if they only knew what to do. With his background and expertise with it, he established a 501c3 nonprofit organization, Hawaii Owners Solution, Inc., Now, this is not an advertisement for them. I'm hoping with the debate and the discussion and all the hardships being experienced, while you're listening to this, please go and do your due diligence and do some checking. And just because they appear on the show, we're not endorsing anyone. It's just that we believe that they have knowledge and information that is helpful, and they're willing to impart that upon us, all of us. I want you to know that I seize the opportunity. So, and then later on, if you want to call in and have questions or you find yourself in a situation, personally, I don't give legal advice, and I'm not suggesting that anything that I've said in or say in this conversation today will be interpreted or construed as legal advice. But anyway, with this background and expertise, he founded this homeowner solution, and that's at 537-4111. To assist homeowners in facing foreclosure who are making their mortgage payments, having problems, and helping them stay in their homes. Melody Aduha, attorney at law, is at 258-8889. Attorney Melody Aduha currently focuses on the foreclosure defense work. Her practice mainly assists homeowners stay in their homes through foreclosure and bankruptcy proceedings. She's a civil litigator and also does some criminal defense work. We know Melody's background, and she was a legislator and has well educated. And we're going to be tossing around things like national mortgage settlement, which was about approximately $1.5 billion. We talked about it 2 or 3 weeks ago. $2,000 homeowner, they get a benefit who lost their homes in wrongful foreclosure. 50 attorney generals versus Ally, GMAC, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Chase, and Wells Fargo, includes our attorney general here too. So there's quite a few things that hopefully, if you find yourself in a need for a bit of information and think that this will help, you feel free to call in, and we will let you have access to these good folk. And again, we're not saying that you have to accept this, what they say, but again, they're willing to come in and sit down, and I'm willing to give the time. So, good morning, Courtney. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. This is another beautiful day here in paradise.
Yeah.
That saying, "Lucky we live Hawaii," is really true.
Yeah.
Okay. You probably have a lot of listeners that have friends or relatives that are on the Philippines, and those people have gone through a terrible tragedy over there, and some of that relief is just starting to get out to the far ends of the country where it's really needed. So,
yeah. And that's what hopefully people are giving, and giving a lot, because just the pictures themselves.
Pretty devastating, aren't
devastating,
they?
Devastating, yeah. And yeah. We can afford it, and we need to lose weight anyway. Send foods.
Listen, I know you're speaking for yourself, but you're speaking for me too as well. So that is absolutely true.
Yeah, but that is a sad one. The largest storm in record.
Yes.
Keeping of meteorology.
Right.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes. Now, did you get the things that I emailed?
Oh, I did, and okay. I appreciate it. You go ahead and introduce yourself again. I was doing that and finished up with you, but just give us a little bit more.
You can take this and do that if you want.
I did.
All right.
So good morning.
Good morning. I'm Courtney Brown. I'm really glad to be here with you today. We're going to spend some time talking about real estate and some of your problems in real estate and some solutions to those problems. It's not just going to be conjecture about, well, there are bad things that happen to a lot of nice people and it's too bad and all that sort of stuff. We're actually going to give you enough information today that you're going to be able to take some action and make your problem better if you'd like to. So
and this will allow them to sort through people offering different packages, and it'll help them a little bit.
There are a lot of people out here. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we also have a lot of people on the mainland that are trying to tell people here that they'll help them do their loan modifications and get their things straightened out with their lender.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, an awful lot of those are just interested in taking your money.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be really careful. Now, We do loan modifications for people. We've done a lot of those. We've got at least better than 100 people so far over the last 3 years that we've kept in their houses. So we do have some track record there. And if you want, at some point, I'll tell you a couple stories about some of those. I'll certainly tell you the better stories anyway.
Well, I hope the takeaway I hope to go away with today is that whoever's listening to this, finding themselves in such a predicament, at least they'll be able to learn something from here and be better served and make better decisions.
We've got quite a bit of time, so I believe that our schedule today calls for us to talk to you about if you're already in foreclosure or if you're not quite in foreclosure, what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you were just talking about the whole securitization mess. So if you had a loan that you did between 2000 and 2008, you should get together with somebody who knows about that
mm-hmm.
and just see if maybe part of your loan isn't already paid off. Now, your servicer's not going to tell you that. But as we get further into our discussion and we talk about the mortgage-backed securitized trusts and the insurance and credit default swaps that paid off part of these loans, those lenders, and you have to keep in mind that when we're talking about the lenders, we're talking about the mainland lenders, not our local banks, okay? They made hundreds of billions of dollars during that period of time, and they made even more by putting together this thing called the mortgage-backed securitized trust. That was an entity that was put together, and there are a lot of those. There are tens of thousands of those out there. They put those entities together to make more money. And then when they insured some of those loans with AIG insurance or sometimes credit default swaps, they even made more money. And they made a lot of that money on the insurance that they put on those, but they're not telling you that. And it's a very interesting thing because the situation on Wall Street, they have different rules than what we have. And we'll probably get a chance to use this example again. But just to give you a quick idea, if the way that insurance worked is, let's use your car. If your car was insured with State Farm and you went and decided to go to Farmers and Liberty Mutual and buy a second or third policy on your car, that's perfectly legal for you to do. You can go insure your car with as many different companies as you want. You just have to pay those premiums. But when it comes time to collect, you only get to collect from one. They have clauses in there that if you collect on one, you have to tell the others about it, and they're not going to do that. That's not true for the Wall Street guys. When they insured these loans and they reached the default place on there, if you went to State Farm and you had an accident and they said, hey, $10,000 worth of damage, here's your $10,000 check, you couldn't go to the other two and collect again. Not true on Wall Street. For that matter, it even gets better for the Wall Street guys because they would go into State Farm and $10,000 worth of damage and say, well, yeah, but your car's worth $50,000, so here's your $50,000 check. And then they got to go do it another time or two or three or more. So they collected a lot of money. And they're keeping that. They're not admitting that that should go to any of our people here. So we'll talk more about securitization when we get to the second hour, I believe, and we'll tell you a little bit more about why that works. And if you had a loan that is in a mortgage-backed securitized trust, and if you did your loan in 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, and it was done with a lender on the mainland, there's probably a better than 95% chance that your loan is in one of these mortgage-backed securitized trusts.
Mm-hmm.
Could be with Freddie Mac, could be with Fannie Mae. They also securitize their loans, but they don't insure them the way the private guys did. So you have options in there, and if you know that, it gives you a big hammer to use with the lender when you're trying to negotiate to get your note modified. That's really when we talk about loan modifications. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about modifying the terms, like the interest rate and the payment amount that you're going to pay on that note.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of those things we'll probably get to a little later, particularly when Melanie gets here.
Mm-hmm. So just for the sake of throwing it out there, we're going to use this term. Can you just explain this, what securitization mean, just as just stalling for time.
That's the whole second hour, but I'll be glad to start off.
But I'm sure it'll come up again.
And if you don't know what that is, you're probably going to need to listen to it two or three times before it starts to sink in, because it's not necessarily simple. It's not rocket science, but it does. It's a little foreign to what most of us would think or know about, so it takes a little time to pick up on it. But the securitization is all about they took your note. When you did your loan, you signed a whole group of papers. In those papers were two ones that we're going to talk about. One is the mortgage and one is the note. Mm-hmm. All right. The mortgage went off to a company called MERS, Mortgage Electronic Registration Systems. They're listed as the beneficiary on your mortgage. And if you still have your papers from your note, go take a look at them. Go take a look at the mortgage and see on the top of the second page, generally is where it is, you'll see who the beneficiary is. It's going to say MERS, according to it, for whoever somebody else is along the way. But I think we're going to take a little break right here and take a call. Is that what you'd like to do?
Right. Well,
I'm reading your face.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question? Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question? Hello? Anyway.
Okay.
Sorry, no one seemed to be there. But
all right.
How is it that our legislators and Congress and senators and regulators or the attorney generals, how could they have allowed such a practice to, for you, you lose your home, you have it insured, and the bank or the mortgage company end up with the money and the house? And this suit just seems like just a Band-Aid, or it's an insult the way I see it.
Well, what really happened is back, actually under Clinton, they started getting rid of a lot of the regulations and allowing the big banks that we have today. Remember, banks used to be separated. Banks used to borrow money from them. They would take money in as deposits and do those kind of things. They didn't sell you securities. They weren't allowed to be involved in the security market. Then they started getting rid of what I believe is the Dodd-Frank Act,
mm-hmm.
And as we went forward from there, under Clinton, they got rid of some more of that, and then I believe under Bush, they actually got rid of probably the rest of it, and so what that allowed to do is that allowed us to have these super banks that we have now. Okay, when you talk about Bank of America, you talk about Citibank or those banks do a lot more than what they used to be able to do just even 15 years ago. So that's how that kind of happened. We got rid of the federal regulation and we allowed them to get involved in securities. And by allowing them to get involved in securities, they were able to put together a thing called a securitized trust. Now, when we say securitized, that should give you a clue right there that it is actually registered with the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, a federal group that registers all securities that you have to do. Each one of these trusts will have a document that governs them. It's called the Pooling and Servicing Agreement. It's usually mm-hmm. 400 or 450 pages thick. Very boring reading, as a matter of fact. But it has some things in there that we're going to talk about later that are really important to you knowing about, or somebody knowing about your loan and whether it's securitized, and if it is, what are the things that you can do about that?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we're going to come back to this topic a little bit later.
Right. Well, we also have now Melody Aduha, attorney. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Carol.
Welcome back.
Good morning, Mr. Brown.
Aloha.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Aloha.
So there's a lot of people out there needing help, and I don't want to sit here and pretend or purport to be knowledgeable of the subject, so feel free to let it flow because I hope I never find myself in this predicament, mm-hmm. needing this, because it's just you seem to be can fall prey to anyone at any time with this. When I read all of the different scams and what, before we go any further, what should a person do? Who should they check with before they engage or sign anything with anyone? Is there any entity out there that could say this company has a record or track record or bad record or
actually,
what do they do?
Actually, no. There are some nonprofit companies that are doing some loan modifications that are One of them is with the Bar Association, and there are a couple of others that are registered with the federal government and such for doing that. They're supported by taxpayer dollars.
Mm-hmm.
They do a job for people.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our people out there have things that are more complicated than what gets accomplished with them. So some of the rest of us get to see those complications and kind of work those things out along mm-hmm. the way. Unfortunately, no. Generally speaking, if somebody's going to charge you money up front on any of this, you really need to go check them out. You need to know that they are doing something that's legitimate for you. About half the people that come in and see me have already paid generally somebody on the mainland $3,000, $5,000, even up to $10,000, although I had one that paid them $30,000, to do their loan modification. And, of course, when it came time that their foreclosure started, they couldn't find them anywhere. So they do have to be careful. All the ads you see about being really careful about what you do and what you pay for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other place to go is you can go see an attorney. Okay? You do have a little bit of a problem in picking out the right attorney because very few attorneys in town know anything about mortgage-backed securitized trusts and this whole securitization thing. For that matter, I have more fingers on my hands than the attorneys in town that know very much about that. So you do have to be selective when you go to see your attorney. Fortunately, we're sitting right here with one that knows something about this stuff and is picking up on that. So mm-hmm. that's one of the few along the way. So you can always go see an attorney, or they can always, if you don't mind, I'll give out a number. They can always call me. It's free to come in and sit down and talk story with me. Mm-hmm. It's not a problem. I'm glad to do that. We do that with lots of people. That number is 537-4111.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a nonprofit company. It's a 501(c), so it's registered with the federal government, with the IRS, all that sort of stuff there, to help people keep their homes. And that's the purpose of the company. The purpose of what the company does is keep people in their homes, get those payments down to where they're more affordable for you, so you're not quite a slave to that home.
Now, do either of you do HUD counseling or HUD-affiliated loans?
I'm not a HUD counselor, but we do HAMP loans all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the loans we submit are under those kind of guidelines
mm-hmm.
to begin with. Sometimes we have to be a little more aggressive when we're submitting on it, so we fall out of those guidelines, but that's because of the situation that the people are in, and we're trying to get a better deal for them.
And
we do get principal reductions. Principal reductions are hard to come by, but we do get those.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere along the way, if you want, I'll give you some of those examples. But most of the modifications we do end up at being about 3%.
Yeah, give a couple of examples now, because it's, if you would, on
sure,
those simple reductions.
Sure, be glad to.
Yeah.
But I'm giving you my good examples, okay?
Well, that's fine.
So, you understand. These are the good ones. These are real ones.
As long as the listeners can bank on it.
That's right. In each of these cases, I'm getting a number of referrals from these people, of course.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lady who her house was worth $515,000. She had a $500,000 mortgage on it. We were able to get a $156,000 principal reduction. That means now she only owes $344,000, if my math is correct. And she's paying that off at 2% for 30 years. Now, remember I told you I'm giving you my good examples.
That's a good example.
That's a really good example. Most of our loan modifications come out at 3%.
Mm-hmm.
Not at two, but we get we probably get one a month out of the number of approvals that we get that may be at 2% or something like that. That's usually other considerations. I've got notes here on one other. In that particular case, this guy's payment was a little over $3,000. We got a modification of that payment down to about $1,300, so he had about a $1,700 difference that he saved mm-hmm. in doing his payment. We got a $104,000 loan modification, a principal reduction on that loan, and then he is paying. In that case, it was a real problem about having the necessary money in order to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's actually at 40 years at 2% for the balance of his loan to bring his payment down.
Mm-hmm.
So the servicers that are approving these things for you will do a number of different things. Sometimes these are step loans. Neither one of these were. But sometimes you get 2% for 5 years, and then you get 2.5% for the next five, and then it'll settle at 3% for the next 20 years that you have. A lot of different ramifications. In some cases, like the last one I just mentioned to you, he actually gets about $32,000, $33,000 off his loan each year for the first 3 years, but he keeps current on his payments. Mm-hmm. So there's some requirements in doing some of these things. So it's just not simple. But as I say, both of those happened within the last few months. But just keep in mind, if you do decide to come in and see me, we're most likely going to end up with something about 3%. But you know, anybody who has a 6% loan today, if they want to come in and get that loan modified and it works to do that, that payment is going to drop by a third mm-hmm. when we get those things. So it makes a real difference for them.
So let's say, and thanks for you guys providing me some questions so that I can make sense of this and the listeners can there be some continuity.
Also, Carol, if mm-hmm. I can interject in the litigation side regarding the hemp, the one thing that's good about the home affordability, what does it stand for?
HAMP?
Yeah. Homeowners Affordability Modification Program.
Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's a government issued under President Obama, and through that you can get the loan principal reduction of $156,000, such as, is that correct?
And yeah.
And which is what Mr. Brown has just described as best case scenario. But another good thing about it is that there is no dual tracking. So while you are undergoing a HAMP modification, then the banks are unable to go forward or move forward on the foreclosure. So that really helps. That would be a big prohibition on the bank's part, which I have argued before the courts before. So that buys the homeowner more time. And from a litigation standpoint, that is where we want to be. We want to be able to buy the homeowners enough time so that we can conduct the necessary discovery to move forward on a feasible, reasonable, justifiable defense on foreclosure.
Now, may I add one caveat to that?
Sure, of course.
The agreement that they signed, which was in February of last year, was a $25 billion settlement. You were mentioning that at the beginning of the mm-hmm. show. There were five major lenders on that. They're not supposed to do this, what we call dual tracking. They're not supposed to be working on a loan modification for you at the same time they're trying to foreclose on you. I would suggest that some of those lenders, certainly the major lender in there, they don't pay attention to that.
Right.
They're foreclosing on people while we're doing loan modifications. Sometimes, certainly when people get served, even though we're doing the loan modification, we go into court. We've got a judge here who has been very responsive to that part of things. And so if we step up and say, hey, we're doing a loan modification on this, he will postpone any court action while loan modification gets done.
All right.
The same thing's true about people that are in bankruptcy. If you're in bankruptcy, and an important thing that we're going to ask Melanie to confirm for us here, but you do a bankruptcy, whether it's a 7 or a 13, you do not need to lose your house. Lots of people tell you, even attorneys will tell you, you're going to lose your property if you do a bankruptcy. You don't have to do that. We do a lot of loan modifications, loan modifications with people that are in bankruptcy and work with those bankruptcy attorneys. And when we show up, or the bankruptcy attorney shows up and says, hey, the lender wants to go ahead and foreclose on this loan, but we're doing a loan modification, the bankruptcy judge will not allow them to go ahead and foreclose on that home while that's going on. So it's not true in every case. In this world, nothing is 100% true. The only thing I know that's 100% true is so far every day I've been alive, the sun has come up.
Okay,
but other than that,
but you don't look tanned.
Well, you know, I live right here, and you're right. Okay, there've been too many people out here needing help along the way for me to spend much time at the beach.
You spend a lot of time indoors.
I'm going to have to change that.
Yeah. So,
one thing also, I'm sorry, Carol, if I may just interject, but when it comes to filing your bankruptcy petition, there is an automatic stay that goes in place, mm-hmm. which is a very, very good tactic. For the homeowner, mm-hmm. because then again you work on a loan modification, or you can work on reorganization under Chapter 13, and the creditors are the bank are no longer able to move forward until there is a motion for relief from automatic stay, and that'll take some time.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that's very important too about bankruptcy, which is a very good litigation tool for foreclosure defense is that the timing is so important. If you are already been confirmed, if the sale has been confirmed in state court, then there is really not much that can be done in the bankruptcy court before Judge Ferris. So number one rule, as soon as you know that banks are starting to decide or think about doing a foreclosure, you need to talk to somebody knowledgeable. More often than not, the clients that come to me, it's so late in the game that it's so difficult to unring the belt, so to speak.
So here's my question. And while you're right on, it's consistent with what you're saying. What happens after Linda serves you in, with the foreclosure papers?
The complaint for foreclosure comes in. You're personally served. You got 20 days to answer. Now, that's important. If you don't answer, if you don't do anything, you don't see anyone, or somehow you can do this pro se. You don't need to get an attorney, but you do need to respond. Because if you don't respond, then the lender is going to move to have an entry of default against you.
Because you fail to get the 20-day response.
Exactly. Exactly. Then it's no defense is going in, and it's like an admission, tacit admission. You don't want to do that because then that's got to be set aside. And procedurally, my clients, boy, you've got the complaint, entry of default has been entered, and then the banks will move for motion for summary judgment. Again, no response. That's granted by default. All of this has to be set aside. It's just much more difficult. Therefore, the number one rule that I tell you that as soon as you get any notice of foreclosure, you need to see someone immediately. And as Mr. Brown has said, there's only a few of us out there that concentrate in this area, because it's a very complex area. And I'm more than happy as well to give a free consultation. My name again is Melody Aduha. My firm name is Aduha and Aduha. I maintain my father's name. He passed in 2007, but he's still my partner, so to speak. So anyway,
still watches over your shoulder.
Exactly. Gives me all my intuition there. Okay. And my number 258-8889. Now that's, please do give me a call, because I don't want to be involved, or at least I will be involved, but I don't want to be involved when the sheriff's knocking on your door, or even worse, your thing's already outside on the streets.
And just so that they have a choice, who they would be looking for an attorney.
Correct.
That does foreclosure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they would have to find that either you or someone else. And then for you, do you come into this, Courtney, at this stage, or is it later, or is it too late? Or
no, I get a number of people that show up with their foreclosure summons, all right?
Okay.
Hopefully they show up within the 20 days. Some of them show up after that. Melanie is 100% correct. They can actually answer that themselves. It's usually helpful if they have somebody help them at least provide that pro se answer. But that's only the first step. That just keeps them in the ball game. Eventually, there's going to be a summary judgment motion. They're going to need an attorney to answer that. So whether they come in and see me and we're working through, because the bottom line here is it's not just stopping the foreclosure. We stop lots of foreclosures.
Right.
But the bottom line is we need to modify the loan so that the foreclosure goes away.
Because that's why you ended up in the problem anyway. It was not necessarily, but the cost. You need to adjust your mortgage payments, right?
That's right. You need to adjust. You need to modify that note. Mm-hmm. As we're talking here today, we're going to be drawing differences between the note and the mortgage.
Okay.
Everybody talks about the mortgage on their house. The mortgage, and Melanie's going to correct me if I don't have this right, and that's just great, okay?
Yeah, because we don't want bad information.
But the mortgage is only a lien. See, we're in a mortgage.
That's correct.
We're in a mortgage state here. We're in a deed state. If you're in California or Washington or a lot of western states over there, those are deed of trust states. Now, in those states, and this is an interesting question that we brought up the other day, my understanding of the deed of trust situation is actually the people really don't own their home. They actually have possession of the home. They have all the rights of ownership, but there's a trustee who really owns the home. And the reason the lenders like deeds of trust because they can foreclose in 90 days or 91 days, as opposed to here when they have to go foreclose on a mortgage. If you will answer that and not let it get defaulted, if you let it get defaulted and don't do anything, 6 months later or before that, you're going to be out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
If you answer that and you're with a good attorney who's helping you do that, then you're going to be in that house for another year, year and a half anyway. And if you really do it correct and you have somebody modify the loan at the same time you're fighting the foreclosure, one, that helps the attorney, whether it's in state court there or whether it's in bankruptcy court, because the judges there are amenable to postponing any action until you get your loan modified. And that's really where you want to be. If you want to keep your house, you have to modify your loan. We should mention a couple of quick things here about when people modify loans. First of all, the requirements for modifying your loan is only having enough income coming into your household so that you can show that you can make the payments. It has nothing to do with credit scores, doesn't have to do with a whole lot of money, you don't have to make up the back payments, none of that. When a loan gets modified, you just start off making a new payment. Generally, it's a lower payment, and it doesn't even have to be your income. If you have adults working in the house, Melanie, we can use those adults as well, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. And I've also used family members to assist in doing a Chapter 13 reorganization.
Yeah.
As well, yes.
So most people, if you're living in a house and you're working, somebody's working in that house anyway, we can probably modify that loan. Mm-hmm. So if you're not working, then that's more difficult. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard one. So, but you need to keep in mind that the requirements really only have to do with the amount of income coming in the house.
What options do I have when it comes to foreclosure? Are there other options?
Well, let's run through some of the things that happen in foreclosures. Is that okay, Melanie?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, the very first thing that happens is you're going to get a letter from your lender. And that letter is what I call a 30-day lender. That letter is going to say, hey, you owe this amount of money, and you have 30 days in which to dispute this. And once they send you that, it may say that they're accelerating your note. It may not say that. But that's the beginning of the process. You get that. The next thing that's likely to happen in the cases that I see, Melanie, is that they get served.
Yep.
Is that right?
That's right. And, of course, along the way, you want to verify the note and the amount that's owed with a qualified written request.
Yeah.
See, these are areas that the layperson is usually unaware of, and as soon as you get that letter from the lender, you should contact someone that would know procedurally what to do next.
Absolutely. One of the reasons we use a qualified written request is because we want to know who actually owns the note. The person that you're making your payments to, whether that happens to be Bank of America or whether it's Wells Fargo or whether it's Citi or whether it's Green Tree or a whole bunch of other what we call servicers out there, they don't own the note. Bank of America probably does not own your note. All those loans that were done with Countrywide, for the most part, were all securitized, topic for a little later,
mm-hmm.
but that means that somebody else owns your note. And by sending the qualified written request, asking certain questions, and incidentally, the qualified written request is under a federal law. They have to respond to that within, let me put it differently. They don't always do that. They're supposed to respond to that within 30 days, and they're supposed to answer a number of those questions. Ours actually have a few questions in it they don't have to answer. It doesn't fall under that statute, but they do sometimes. Or they write me back letters from their attorney saying, hey, these are not appropriate questions on their qualified written request, but here's your answers anyway. So that will tell us who owns the note. That's really important, because when we get down a little further and we're talking with Melanie about the securitization of loans and that, we want to know if your loan is in one of those mortgage-backed securitized trusts.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes, that's very important, because in any foreclosure, in order for the banks to foreclose, they've got to be the owner and possessor of the note. So that is your number one defense. And that is where, unless you know how to pinpoint who it has good title and who is the holder in due course of that note, then you're basically not going to have the right tool to defend against the foreclosure.
Would it help to have our state legislators here to implement a law that would help address these things with more specific things, allowances, because it seems like they've allowed this to develop, and now you're left to your own defenses.
Okay, sorry. actually, they did a pretty good job here a few years ago.
Or is there anything in place now?
Well, they did a couple of years ago. Before that, if we want to go back 3 years, 4 years, almost all the mortgage foreclosures were done by what we call power of sale. That's very akin to having a deed of trust on the property, and they can get that foreclosure done outside of any court procedures within about 90 days. The legislature saw what was going on. They saw a lot of abuses that were being made by the foreclosure attorneys. We have some foreclosure mills here in terms of attorneys that are doing that. Mm-hmm. They saw some of those abuses that were happening, so they made a change in the law, and they set it up so that, one, the attorneys had to file an affidavit that all the documents they were filing are correct. Now, they've kind of figured out a way to get around that. Not already, but that's the way the law says. They also said that in a non-judicial foreclosure, that's a foreclosure done under power of sale, everything has to be 100% correct. Anything that is not, and it can be a small thing, voids that foreclosure. So title companies won't insure those anymore that are being done by mortgage people. So, consequently, almost all of them are done as a judicial process now. That's a great boom for people that are in trouble. Because if we can stop that procedure, we get it into court, then people like Melanie, they have a place to play there where they can do an awful lot for people. So they made that kind of change. It wasn't perfect. You have to remember that the head of the Bar Association Collection Division was down there testifying on this, and a lot of other people were too. So we all got a chance to do a little bit of testimony and talk with the chairmen of the two committees that it was going through on both the House and the Senate side. And like most things, most bills that come through the legislature, well, they're compromises.
So these foreclosure mills that were processing and not finding all of the documents, is this where the certified forensic loan auditor comes in? Will that help?
Yes, it helps a lot. It actually does. Because one of the things it does is it pinpoints who actually owns the note. Mm-hmm. And if it's owned by a mortgage-backed securitized trust, it will show right in there often what different groups it's in. Most mm-hmm. of these mortgage-backed securitized trusts have 18 to 21. They've divided their notes into 18 to 21 different groups. It'll pinpoint which ones you're in. And it will show which ones of those are paid off. And so if part of those are paid off and your note's in some of those, it seems to me, at least it's my opinion, that part of your note ought to be paid off. But those lenders are not telling you that.
Now, are the courts, local courts here, recognizing and accepting forensic auditors, or is it something new, or how are you received?
Sometimes poorly, but every now and then. Where it has the most effect, it has the most effect with the attorneys on the other side. Okay, they see what's there. They see that you know what they don't want you to know. And so all of a sudden they become much more amenable. Sometimes they just back off. Sometimes they just go away and stop their foreclosure. But otherwise, a securitized audit gives you a big hammer in dealing with those lenders. And remember what we're doing for people is we're trying to modify their loans. So sometimes the modifications happen direct with the lenders. We're going through all the procedures, sending all the papers in, doing all that sort of stuff with them. Sometimes those loans get modified in the foreclosure procedure with the attorneys that are there because they see and they don't want to have to answer. They don't want to have to bring into court the information that points out that's there. So
give me three, if the two of you could, just three documents that these foreclosure mills fear. That you would discover, the deadliest.
Melanie.
Well, definitely the note.
The note.
Yes, definitely the note. Because without the note, that is the underlying contract that you need to keep current. And if the plaintiff, at this point, because there's always different change of the chain of title, the note gets transferred, or the note doesn't get transferred, or the note gets lost, so. Yes, the note is the big kahuna, so to speak.
Right. Okay.
And a lot of the banks, at some point in time, the note is separated from the mortgage. So what the banks have is the mortgage. Mm-hmm. But if they don't have the note, then they have no right to foreclose. And oftentimes, as an attorney, we utilize these. I do. 100% of my cases, I do. I utilize the certified forensic loan audit to guide me, to tell me whether there is a break in the chain of title, which means that the note is somewhere else. It's in mm-hmm. someone's possession. It's not in the possession of the plaintiff. And then with the audit, the auditor who did it becomes my expert witness at trial.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why the plaintiff is afraid of that document, because they're, throughout this whole procedure, from the loan origination, from the time that the note or the mortgage has been bundled, put mm-hmm. in tranches, sold as securitized mortgage
mm-hmm.
On Wall Street, investors have paid in, bailouts had happened under President Obama, and all of these things has happened with that mortgage. So it's a very complex chain of title that needs to be looked into, and unless you know what you're looking for, it's going their hide and seek tactic is definitely going to hide what they want you to find.
Okay, callers, if you're calling in, a little patience if you want to participate. 524-1080. Anyway, so the second document or the second thing that would...
Well, one of the things that's happened is that the mortgage has been transferred. It started off going not to whoever actually made the loan. It started off going to MERS, Mortgage-Backed Electronic Registration System. Well, it sat there for some time. When we're talking about loans that were done in that time period I mentioned, mm-hmm. particularly 2003 to 2008, that are probably likely securitized, that mortgage did not get transferred to that mortgage-backed securitized trust. And the reason that's important is because they only had a small window in order to put their documents together. They had to have them all in there, and then there was a closing date, and they had 30 days after that to gather all the paperwork. Well, if you have a mortgage-backed securitized trust that was done in 2006, and there was a closing date in 2006 on it, and now you've got an assignment of that mortgage that's dated in 2009 when they were doing all the robo-signing, or it may be even just 6 months before they started their foreclosure action, right? The question becomes, is that valid? Is that transfer valid to get that over there so they can combine the note and the mortgage so they can go forward with their foreclosure? Some of us contend that it's probably not valid. Would you agree?
Definitely. That is the biggest red flag. If you've got an assignment of mortgage that was done after the closing of the trust, then yes, and the closing of the trust is usually 90 days.
Yes.
Right? Under the Internal Revenue Code, it's 90 days.
Some of them, actually, I saw one that went for about a year and a half from beginning and ending dates, but those dates are always in their pooling and servicing agreement when they're going
right.
to close. But when we got in the heyday of doing this stuff in 2005, 2006, they put $1 billion to $3 or $4 billion worth of notes in these trusts, and they did it all within that 90-day period. And they did tens of thousands of these trusts. Okay?
Right.
So most of the trusts that I've seen some with smaller, but most of them have anywhere from $1 billion to $4 billion worth of notes in them. Now, you say, well, what happened? They took those, they put them into different classifications or categories, really. They grouped them into different groups, and they call those groups tranches. Well, but they didn't do it the way you might think. Carol, your mortgage loan is not in one group. They took and fractionalized it and put 3% in one and 10% in another and 8% in something else. And so sometimes, like the one that's sitting there, there are 18 tranches in that one. Mm-hmm. The note that's referred to there is in 12 of those tranches. All of those, or most of those, are already paid off. As you, where the clip is, I put on the side there for you. If you read the very top part of that, you can see. Well, if that many of those are paid off, why aren't you getting credit on your mortgage? Now, the way they got paid off is they insured those. They insured them with AIG insurance, or sometimes they bought a thing called credit default swaps. Credit default swaps, not really insurance, but for our purposes, it works the same way. And when they reach the default level, usually about 7%, then they not only paid off the ones that were in default, they paid off everything in that whole group or that whole tranche, which means that a lot of people whose loans were current all the way through here, from my perspective, I think that they are paid off, or part of it's paid off. They're none of them completely paid off. Okay.
Yeah, we got about three more minutes. Go ahead,
okay.
and then we'll take the next hour, take a break, and come back.
Okay. All right. Well, what really happened is your note was sold to one of these mortgage-backed securitized trusts. The mortgage-backed securitized trust combined your note with a whole lot of others, mixed them all up. It's kind of like throwing an extra bucket of water into a swimming pool. They took them and they fractionalized them, or they put them in these different groups or tranches. The reason the 7% figure I mentioned in terms of default is important, because at that time, we had never seen higher than a 3.5% default rate nationwide in terms of mortgages. So when AIG Insurance, they went to them and said, hey, will you insure these? And the reason they wanted them insured is because they were selling off bonds to pension funds and sovereign banks. Pension funds can't buy things if they're not AAA rated. So they went through a lot of manipulations in terms of these notes and how they divided them up in order to be able to get as many AAA rated groups or tranches as they could, because they would sell those to, they would sell a bond to them based on those things, the pension funds. So what does that mean to you? It means if you have a mortgage and it was done between that period of time, 2000 to 2008, particularly in 2003 to 2007, there's an excellent chance that your note is in one of these mortgage-backed securitized trusts, and there's a very good chance, if it's in there, that part of it, not all of it now, but part of it is actually paid off. That's why we do the forensic audits. It points all that out. We'll probably come back to this and visit this a little more. Just let me mention to you that they sold these bonds to pension funds, and what happened and what created our the thing to fall apart happened to do with a change in the rating by Standard & Poor's on some of these particular tranches and how they had them rated there. We can come back to all that a little later. The important part to remember, if you had a loan that was done in that particular period of time, you should visit with somebody who knows something about what's going on. Let's find out where it is, and maybe part of your loan is paid off. Because when we show up with one of these forensic audits and answer your question in court, or we're talking to those attorneys, that's a big hammer. They get very amenable toward working out something.
Well, we'll be back in the next hour. This is the Carol Cox Show. And by the way, you can go to or tell your friends, we're broadcasting live over the Internet as well, streaming at carolcox.com. Anyway, we'll be back shortly, and 524-1080 if you want to participate or have some questions.
Well, my home's in the Delta, way out on that farmer's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving here in the morning. Won't be back no more. Well, I know my little baby, this girl don't know what a shape I'm in. You know I haven't had no loving and God knows where.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.
Still a chair, even when there's no one sitting there. But a chair is not a house, and a house is not a home when there's no one there to hold you tight. And no one there you can kiss goodnight. Oh, well, a room is still a room. There's nothing there but gloom. But a room is not a house, and a house is not a home when the two of us are far apart and one of us now and then. I call your name, and suddenly your face appears, but it's just a crazy game when it ends. It ends. Pretty little darling, have a heart. Don't let one mistake keep us apart. I'm not meant to live alone. Turn this house into a home when I and turn the key, oh, oh, please be there, saying that you're still in love with me.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
Hey, good morning, and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Here at KWAI 1080 AM. As you know, we moved our hours 9 to 11. And you can also catch us live stream on the Internet. Go to carolcox.com and follow the directions there. And it's as easy as pushing a button. And tell your friends out on the outer islands. We're getting quite a bit of response. And so I have this morning Attorney Melody Aduha and Mr. Courtney Brown. And we're talking foreclosures and what you can do to protect yourself or in case you find yourself in a predicament or a family member. They're sharing with us some of the information. And as always, remember, as I told you in the opening, this is not a commercial. It's not an endorsement. Whoever you go to, check and recheck and make sure it's up to you to make the final decision. Right, guys?
Yeah, absolutely.
No. Don't
be forced or feel that you're compelled to sign with anyone. But use due diligence, and yes, no foreclosure notice is in the mail, but that doesn't mean it's panic time. So take your time and walk through it carefully. And Courtney has quite a bit of information, and just as a disclosure, he also, what is your business?
Well, what we're primarily talking about here is Hawaii Homeowners Solutions, Inc., mm-hmm. which is a nonprofit company. It's a 501(c). And it modifies loans for people. That's what we do to keep people in their houses. Mm-hmm. Now, there's another side of the businesses that I do because I'm in the wholesale property business. Mm-hmm. I'm not a realtor, but I do buy and sell properties along the way. I do go to the courthouse, and I buy properties at the lanai when they're being foreclosed on there. It's always a little sad for me to go do that because if those people had come to see me ahead of time, we probably could have kept them in their house.
Mm-hmm.
But most people don't. Lots of people just walk away. Also, in case of our military, a lot of times they're being transferred somewhere, and they just need to get rid of that property.
Right.
In those cases, we'll step in and buy the property from them. We'll buy that property from them even if they owe more on the property than what the property is worth.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why can we do that? Because, remember, we're negotiating with these lenders all the time. So I can buy that property where you owe more on the property than what it's worth, and then I'll go fight in court if it's a foreclosure that's happening, or I'll negotiate with those lenders. Mm-hmm. Often we'll get to pay that off for less than what's owed on the property. I'll do it in such a way that there's not a 1099 issued to the borrower,
mm-hmm.
so they don't have a tax consequence in terms of what we're talking about. They don't end up with a deficiency judgment, and they're able to walk away from that property if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to keep in mind that foremost, we want to keep you in their house. We think it's good policy to keep people in their houses if it's all possible.
Mm-hmm.
In those situations where that doesn't work for you, or you want to get rid of a property, or a number of different things like that, then we also will step in with some of those solutions. When you come in and talk to me, we just sit down and talk story. We talk about what's going to work for you and see what we can come up with, and then they get a chance. There's no charge for any of that, and in some cases, I send them elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't have all the answers.
Because there is a lawyer involved at some point.
There,
and they can
often there is.
Consult.
I have an in-house lawyer. Melody's here. All right, I'm working on that. Melody's here, and we're working together on a one or two. I work with a number of different attorneys, particularly three or four different bankruptcy attorneys along the way,
mm-hmm.
because sometimes bankruptcy is an appropriate route. For people to take to keep their house. We prefer to do the loan modification and then do the bankruptcy to get rid of if you've got a lot of personal debt and such
right.
to do.
So how soon after a foreclosure can a person buy a house? If the house is foreclosed, how soon can I go out and buy another house?
If you're going to go buy it for cash, you can go out the next day and buy it.
Okay? No.
If you want to finance it, then you have a little bit more of a problem. I believe we're talking about 3 or 4 years for Fannie Mae that says you can't buy another house that they're going to finance or insure. But if you went to Bank of Hawaii and it's only 6 months later and they were willing to finance it for you, they could go ahead and do that if it's not going to go to one of those government agencies. Am I correct about what we're talking about here?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Of course, with the bankruptcy, then you've got that on your record, so that will make it a little bit more difficult in,
sure.
in qualifying for a loan. But, yeah, as if you have the income, then generally you can go ahead and buy another house.
Yeah.
But I did want to note, though, that given the choices between a foreclosure from a bank standpoint, to a foreclosure versus a HAMP, they would much rather foreclose on the house than offer loan modification.
You know, she hit on a very important point here. When we think about these lenders out there, and we're heard in the news that people are always saying, hey, they would rather modify your loan or do something else to keep you in your house and do all that sort of stuff, let me suggest to you that that's not correct. The reason we know it's not correct is because just here a few months ago, Bank of America was found guilty in a civil suit, and part of what they had for doing exactly that, putting people in foreclosure doing that, we have testimony from five or six of their former employees that says they testified that Bank of America would give them cards, gift cards to Best Bath and Beyond and to Best Buy if they would take somebody they were working with on a loan modification and put them into foreclosure. Why do they do that? You have to keep in mind that they're all about the money. Okay, these people, they're not necessarily bad people in that sense. They're nice to talk to. They work with you. We work with them all the time. You just have to remember that they're coming from all about the money. They will make more money by foreclosing, even where you owe more on your house than the value of the property. They'll still make more money by foreclosing than they will by modifying that loan. One of the reasons that's true is the person you're working with is a servicer, not the person who, not the entity that actually owns your note. So the servicer makes more money with more fees and such by foreclosing than they do by modifying their loan. So, guys, the days when we used to think of bankers the same way we might have thought of priests, you know, the church was just down the street, right? Those days are over with. You need to really keep in mind where they're coming from, and then you can understand. There's also another little thing in answer to your question there real quick we might mention. When they start those HAMP loans over again with the federal government, do you know what they get? They get $1,000 from the federal government. So if they're doing your loan and you get partway through it and then they deny it, and then a month later you get a letter from them say, hey, here's some new applications, come back and try this again, they pick up another $1,000.
So they're encouraged to delay it.
They're all about the money, and if you figure out what they're doing in order to make more money, well, then you can work the system to get the modification that you want so you can keep your house. There's a lot of stuff in there that you have to know. It's one of the reasons why it's difficult for people to get their modifications on their own, and you can do that. The lenders all say, hey, come work with me. They don't want you to work with a third party like Hawaii Homeowner Solutions. They want you to work direct with them. Part of that reason is they can tell you what they want to tell you, and you won't know whether it's correct or not. They have a harder time because we know what all their formulas are. We've got them all on my computer. I know when we send an application in and they plug those figures into the PUCAs on their screen, I know what the result they're going to get. So when we know that, we have a better chance to get a good modification for people.
Speaking of government loans, when the federal government give $1,000, how about veteran loans, the VA loans for homes? Does that come into play here? Because I've had an individual, the husband bought it on the VA Veterans Administration loan, and he passed, and then financially came in hardship. So what are the rules applying to that, or how does one safeguard themselves there? Is it
actually, the Veterans Administration has a local person here, and if you're having trouble getting your veterans loan modified, you can always touch base with them, and they will step in and help you do that. The VA wants to see you be able to get the loan modified, not the lender make more money. So they're willing to step in and help that. There are other things that we do. You know, we may get you to contact your congressperson, your senator, or representative, if they're giving us a hard time. If we've got a loan modification person there that's just flat out not handling things anywhere the way we'd like to do, we'll write a letter to the president of the company. We get to write letters to the president of Bank of America on some of these things. And you know what? They have a whole special group of people out there that when you make that kind of complaint to them, then you get handled by that group as opposed to the normal people we work with most of the time.
So a simple letter to your congressional representative or Senate would start the ball rolling, or what is the organization or agency that they could go to?
Well, in this case, they just go directly to their senator representative and say, we're trying to do this loan modification with these people, and they're not doing anything that seems to be reasonable to us.
Okay.
Or they're doing things that seem to be unreasonable to us. They're doing things we don't think they should be doing.
And that's exactly what was happening. I mean, they had money. They just needed to modify it, you know, because of the unexpected death.
Yeah. You know, we have a case in court right now. This couple was current on their loan a couple years ago now. They were current on their loan. They went to the lender, the servicer in this case, and said, hey, we want to modify our loan. You know, our situation has changed. We don't have the same income coming in. We want to modify it. And they said, well, we can't do that because you're current on your loan. Get delinquent, miss three payments, and then come back and see us. So they followed the rules. They did what they said. They missed three payments. When it got time to the fourth payment, they came back and said, okay, now we want to modify our loan. And they said, okay, now you can send in your application. And so they sent in their application. They sent in all the extra paperwork. They usually ask you to send in paperwork two or three times that you've already sent to them. I mean, it's a chore if you're doing it yourself. And then after about 6 months, they gave them a trial payment. The trial payment was about half of what their normal payment was. They thought, that's a great deal. They made the trial payment for 8 months. Then the lender came back and said, whoop, you're denied. Okay? We're not going to do your modification.
So how many?
A month after that, they got their foreclosure papers.
Sounds like they're getting gift cards somewhere.
That's right.
I don't have the proof, but it sounds like it's consistent with the Bank of America.
I have a client right now that has gone through the HAMP procedure, and actually the outcome was no real change. The bank just offered a trial period where the monthly payment was reduced by a mere $10.
I get lots of people that come in with me, and they've done modifications with a lender, and their payment went down by just a little bit, or it went up. In some cases, the payment has actually gone up. And then they come in and see me and say, well, what's going on? You know, this doesn't help me at all.
And they put them on a trial payment.
They did.
Yep.
That should have been the red flag there.
Well, yes and no. A lot of our loan modifications, they want to see that the people make three payments before the loan modification becomes current. That would be three new payments.
Mm-hmm. Right? I understand.
So those are actually trial payments along the way, and then it becomes fixed in what they're doing. So,
that you described earlier about the veterans, that's a little different. That looks like shenanigans in place.
As I say, there is help through the Veterans Administration if you're having trouble. If you're trying to do your own loan modification and you have a VA loan, a VA-insured loan, then if you're having a problem, then call the Veterans Administration. They'll put you in touch with the people that are here. A very pleasant lady who works at that sort of stuff. She's got lots of requests, so she's probably inundated with too much work to do, but they will step in. And the servicers, whether it's Bank of America or whoever's doing it, we pick on them most because they're the ones who've paid out the most in penalties so far for doing things wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things we didn't mention when we were talking about the years 2000, 2008 in there, the reason that Melody is able to get so far in terms of what she's doing in some of the lawsuits, mm-hmm. that's because the lenders did a lot of things that were wrong. Some of them they did on purpose. Now, you know they did that on purpose because in February of last year, they agreed to a $25 billion settlement.
Right.
You know, when you start talking about billions of dollars, I don't know. I can't get my arms around that.
Right.
Most people don't know how many zeros are in a billion.
And they're not going to go out and actually settle in just a basic allegation.
Well, they did that so that they didn't have to go to jail, and they did that because the people who have the big money to sue them, you know, most of Melody's clients that come in, they're probably not very rich. They don't have $100,000 to do some sort of big suit against the lenders.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who do have are our state attorney generals. So that's why they settled with the state attorney generals, because that's where the that's the people with the big pockets that could go forward with some of them. Fortunately, we have one in New York who is suing them anyway, even after this settlement, claiming that they're not following through and doing what they said they were going to do.
I do want to note, I guess, the banks that are part of the national mortgage settlement with the 50 attorney generals. And those banks may trigger some of the listeners' minds that they may have a potential cause of action against these banks. Mm-hmm. And that would be Ally and GMAC, Ally/GMAC, Bank of America, Citibank, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Wells Fargo. Oh, I'm sorry. I did say 50. It's 49 states.
Oklahoma was the holdout.
Oklahoma? Oh, I thought all 50. Okay.
Oklahoma made their own deal.
Yeah.
And people who were were trying to do loan modifications there and weren't successful in that sort of stuff, they got some pretty substantial checks.
$2,000.
More than the $300 or $500 or something that people the other states got.
Okay, what's in play here? The Obama administration settled this. $25 billion sounds like a lot, mm-hmm. but they still able to do some of the things that got them into the predicament to have to settle out the first place.
It's because it's all about the money.
It's
remember,
about the money.
They made hundreds of billions of dollars during that period of time. A $25 billion settlement is a little slap on the wrist along the way.
But you don't have to speak to this, but why would the president and this administration settle for that knowing that the harm done and then allow it to continue? That sounds as if it's fraudulent, too.
You'll have to ask them, okay?
Well, I
have some suspicions along the way, but you have to go back and take a look at who the big contributors are to his campaigns and things like that.
Okay.
Now, yes, there's something out here that needed to be taken care of, and some of the state attorney generals and other people were already doing this. This was a suit that wasn't started by the federal government. It was started by some of the state attorney generals along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the federal government got involved. Quite frankly, he wanted it done in January before his State of the Union message in January so that mm-hmm. he could use it. Right then. So he was pressing them to do that. It didn't happen until February. But there's a lot of politics that goes into all this.
Well, I keep seeing this, and I don't see it hitting the radar as where it's supposed to be placed. But, you know, we're talking about his health care bill and the failure, to be honest with the people. This one here is worse, in my opinion, to settle out and then leave the activities in place where they can still rip and shred the homeowners and keep the money. I'm sorry.
It's okay. You happen to be correct.
Yeah, that okay. starts to say the real definition of the word Obama is,
Okay.
It's like, let's wheel and deal, you know.
You don't seem to be getting any objections, at least, on us.
Well, no, I didn't offer that for any opinion. It's just me. $25 billion and $2,000 to each homeowner, and the bank walks away with the loot and keep the money that they stole.
Actually, very few people got $2,000.
Yeah, $1,800 or $800. I have some letters say $800, and some didn't even get $800.
So most of the ones that I've seen, I had a number of people that I'm doing loan modifications call me. And that's a different program that they set up to do there. But under that particular program, most of my people got $300 or maybe $500. And they'd call up and say, I got this check from the government. What can I cash this check? Am I giving away something when I do that? And actually, they weren't giving away anything. It was okay for them to cash it. It said right on there that they were preserving all their rights to sue them and do whatever they wanted.
Oh, okay.
So it was okay for them to do that. But I got, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 of those calls from people that said, I got this check. What do I do about this? And one person did get a $3,000 check. But most of them were $300.
But then he lost his home.
They've lost their home. Yeah.
Oh, lots of people have done that.
Yeah. Yeah. So $3,000 in Honolulu would get you maybe a parking stall.
Oh, not even.
Parking stall for a while.
Yeah, for the night. And then you have to move when
actually, $3,000 would probably rent you a parking stall for a year or two.
Is there, down the road, is there anybody talking about suing and going back, like our attorney general? She shouldn't have accepted this.
Yeah, I mean, we are. Why? We're looking into it.
Yeah.
Is there a class action suit somewhere along the line? And if folks, if you're out there, I don't give legal advice, but call these guys and get on board. This is kind of disheartening.
No, I'm getting calls and inquiries about just following up with that, which we're working towards. See how we're going to go about doing that, because it's definitely a lot of people should have that benefit of a set-off or a credit or something.
Yeah,
and give your contact numbers again.
Okay,
so
they really need to call an attorney to do that. I'm not an attorney.
Right.
I just try and keep people in their house.
Yeah. Right.
That's what we're doing, okay?
And Melody Aduha is attorney at 258-8889, and then Courtney Brown is at Hawaii Homeowner Solutions, 537-4111. And again, this is not an endorsement of either, but just to say, talk with them and talk with others, and at least you'll be informed. They're willing to share with us, and I'm willing to listen. So, anyway,
And they can come in, and it doesn't cost them anything. Come in, sit down with either one of us, and sit down and talk story about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll take the time to see if there's some solutions to their problem.
So, qualifying for loan modification, do I have to qualify for a loan modification?
Yes, you do.
And what is the qualifications?
You have to have the necessary income coming into your household, not just you, but the working adults in your household, in order to show that you can make that payment.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you were saying you would inject some of the other
family members yes,
that are employed, their income.
Yes, that's correct. I also want to say, though, with the hemp, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you have equity in your house, that hemp loan modification process is going to be very difficult to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the homes do have equities.
A lot of the homes do have equity. We are getting those loan modifications. Sometimes, if it's not going to qualify under hemp, most of the servicers have their own in-house programs. They're usually not as beneficial as the HAMP program. You don't get quite as good a deal out of those, but you can do those. You also have some income limitations along the way in terms of actually equity and asset value limitations along the way when you're dealing with a HAMP program, and you get around those sometimes with an in-house program that they're doing. So there's more than one avenue. You have to you can't have blinders on when you do this. If you're sitting down with somebody and all they know is how to fill out a piece of paper and do the figures on it and send it off to see what happens, you can do that yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need somebody else to help you do that. The lenders will send you their packages, and you can sit down and fill out all those numbers and send them in and keep your fingers crossed. But you know what? If you don't fall within the right percentages when they add all those figures up and start doing that, then you're going to get denied. So it's helpful if you sit down with somebody who knows that, so that we can see that the figures go in correctly so you get approved.
Now, again, as I had asked you to share with me some of the... I meet a lot of people, and I read quite a bit of this stuff, but you gave me a pretty good list of here that simple as simple can get, and that is why do people might want to call you folks, and I'll give them a list, and you can speak to them. You're upside down.
You owe more on the house than the value of the property.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of people that are in that situation. And that's part of what happens often with the principal reductions.
Mm-hmm.
We try in every case, doesn't always work. Let me rephrase that or say that one more time. It does not always work. Principal reductions are difficult to get. All right, but we try to at least get the amount that you owe on the property down to what the value of the property. And actually, we will start when we submit the first time. We will submit it at 80% of the value of the property, so you end up with some equity in it. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
we get that, sometimes we don't. But that's the way it, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't ask,
mm-hmm.
you never know.
So you're behind in payments.
If you're behind in payments, you're going to have to do some adjustments. Most people that get behind in payments are not sitting there with their money on the side so they can come in and bring it current.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you modify the loan.
Mm-hmm.
So you modify the loan so that they don't have to make up those back payments. They can just start off making a new payment, In our case, generally, it's a new payment that's lower than the one that you're making before, and you get over all that, and you just get started off again. You make that first new payment once we get it modified, and they're showing you current on your credit report at that point.
So mortgage is too high. Now, this also is a good reason for them to call and start seeking assistance, correct?
Sure. The mortgage is too high. They just can't make those payments for whatever the reason is. So we need to modify it one way or another so they can. You know, if they're sitting there with a mortgage, and often that's the case where they owe more on the property than the value of the property, and we don't get principal reductions on all those. Don't, please don't come in and say, hey, I want you to say it on the radio that you can do this, right? Every one of these is different. Every one you have to work out on its own basis, on its own merits, and what can be done, and a lot of that depends upon the lender.
So between 2000 and 2008, if your mortgage closed,
if you're
then you want to call.
Absolutely.
Should, okay.
They should come see somebody because you want to find out whether your loan is securitized or not. Okay? Mm-hmm. If it's securitized, then you have a whole world of options to you about what can be done. Now, it's a fight, all right? But there's a whole world out there. If your loan is securitized and a third of it's already paid off, you don't want to keep paying on that part.
Mm-hmm.
So, an ARM.
You have an option
ARM. Adjustable rate mortgage, mm-hmm. or what you just mentioned, an option ARM. And an adjustable rate mortgage, your payment is going to adjust depending on where a particular index is. Usually it's the LIBOR index. If you were reading carefully here 6 months ago or 8 months ago or something, well, there was a lot of question about the LIBOR index because the people who were doing the index and the lenders that were doing that were manipulating it in order to make more money. Remember what I said. These banks are all about the money. Okay? But if you have an adjustable rate mortgage, it is my opinion that you need to change that right away. You need to get that loan modified because we're not going to see these low rates forever. We've seen a little uptick in them over the last month or so. We saw a downtick, just a small one, this past week in mortgage rates. But somewhere along the way, we're going to get back to where mortgages are 6 or 7%. Or if you've lived as long as I have, I can remember where mortgage rates were 12 and 14%. At one point under Jimmy Carter, they got to 21% for a few days, for a week or so, with FHA. That was the FHA rate at 21%.
Wow.
So,
now, let me ask you, you know there's a lot of military in town.
Mm-hmm.
Foreclosure process, would that affect my security clearance, or what do I have to worry?
Yeah, often it does because some of those military people, apparently more than what I actually thought, have security clearances. Now, I've had one of those, okay? I've had a top secret security clearance for a number of years for some of the entities that I was working for, mostly in technology and space technology and mm-hmm. such like that. But it's not on there. I didn't say anything about that. I'm old enough that I worked on putting the Atlas and Titan missiles up and that stuff. But anyway,
I was around when they had catapults.
Is that right?
No.
We're going to have to talk about that along the way. I'd like to have some personal information about that. Yeah. Yeah, they need to protect their security clearances. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a good idea for them just pick up, they've gotten papers to move. They're getting transferred somewhere else, or they're being deployed, mm-hmm. and they're not going to be able to make those payments, and it's not a good idea for them to just walk away from okay. that house, all right? So that's why I say come in and sit down and talk with us. We'll try and figure out an answer that will work for you in terms of what you want to do.
And your house is in probate, or you're having a litigation of some sort, or what have you. Yeah. How does that impact, and should I seek assistance?
One of the sad things that we see is some relative passes away, parent, grandparent, and they've got a house and it has a mortgage on it out here. Now they got a bunch of different siblings, you know, maybe they're 3 or 4 or 5 kids. Nobody's making that mortgage payment. So when they don't make that mortgage payment, what happens? There's a foreclosure on the house. We see them come up on the lanai at the courthouse on Punch Bowl all the time. They're being foreclosed on because it was in probate, and none of the people who were the beneficiary of that probate
are
willing to step up and make those mortgage payments, so they lose that house and they lose that equity. So if that's the situation that you're in, what you really want to do, in the most cases, they don't want to keep it. They want the money out of it. Glad to sit down and talk with them about how to do that.
Mm-hmm. That is, it repeats itself over and over in this in many places. But I know a couple where the family, no one decides, well, I'll take over because the other does not want to pay or can't pay, and just waiting for their share.
Yeah.
But you got a service, you got to protect it to be able to split it, correct?
That's correct.
And that's what...
Yeah, and then you've got a probate proceeding that has to go on. A special administrator, a personal representative has to be appointed.
And this is why we should have good wills and written wills and to ensure that...
Well, you should...
Or trust.
Trust or something, but you still have the problem that if there's a mortgage on the property and there's nobody around to make that payment, mm-hmm. or nobody's willing to make that payment, eventually there's going to be a foreclosure. So...
Wow.
So that's why we get to talk with people that have properties. That somebody died, and they're going to get a small share on it, but they're not going to get enough for them to step up and start making a $2,000 or $3,000 a month payment on that house, and they probably don't have the resources to do that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to get together with somebody who will step in and help solve that problem.
Now, on Hawaiian homelands, same rules. Or are they different because they're different types of loans, or some get regular loans? If you're not familiar, just curious.
I'm going to let the attorney speak to that because I really don't know much about the rules on Hawaiian homelands and mm-hmm. that. They do get mortgages, and so mm-hmm. once in a while we get somebody that comes in. But I haven't had very many, maybe only one or two over the last 3 years that had a property on Hawaiian homelands. Mm-hmm. We did modify those loans for them.
Mm-hmm.
But what the consequences were if they didn't make the payment, or who ends up with what, or that, my guess is it's kind of probably like having a leasehold property. But I don't know that.
I mean, they do get loans from regular institutions and mortgages. So it's just if they fail, then I guess it would be the same rules.
I would assume it would be very close to the mm-hmm. same rules. But I've got a case currently right now, and it's... It's a homestead 999-year lease. So they're trying to get title such that they can obtain a loan so that they can purchase the mm-hmm. lease and convert it into a fee or something to that effect for improvements on the land itself. But insofar as my involvement, it's with the leasehold interest and not necessarily with a mortgagee.
Okay. Should a person quit their mortgage payments to qualify for a modification?
We don't ever... we're both going to answer this question separately, but I don't ever tell anybody to stop making their payments.
Yeah.
Now, the caveat to that is if they're behind on their payments, if they're not making payments, the lender's going to pay more attention to them in terms of modifying the loan. If you stop and think about it, the lender doesn't have a lot of incentive to modify a loan that's current.
Right, because he's getting big bucks.
They're getting the payments anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So why do anything that's going to reduce the interest rate or reduce the payments? So, but we don't tell anybody to stop making their payments.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do that.
What's the difference between loan modification and reduction, principal reduction? You've already talked about them, but before we leave the show, I wanted to go over just a reminder.
Well, principal reduction is often part of the loan modification. Okay, principal reduction means that they're going to the servicer, through the representing the note holder, is going to forgive part of what you owe. That's the principal reduction. The loan modification part goes as that's part of that, but what you're really doing is you're either modifying the interest rate, modifying the payment amount, or in the case of principal reductions, we're modifying the principal part. We are dealing with a note. Remember we talked at the beginning, there are two different things, and there's a lot of, we don't say it right. We talk about having a mortgage on their house. What we really have is we have an obligation on a note. That's what controls. The mortgage is only a lien on the property, just like any other type of lien until you're delinquent. Mm-hmm. What the mortgage does is give the lender the right to foreclose on that property because that gives them a security interest in that property when you don't make those payments. But you got to remember, and I'm going to get corrected if I'm wrong on this, and that is just fine. But the mortgage is just a lien on the property you
That's
own.
Right.
In this state, you own that property. They can't tell you to get out or move or any of those other things along the way until they've gone through the whole foreclosure process and it's happened. So we get people coming in that say that, hey, they were talking with their loan servicer and they told them they had to move out of the house.
So the lien is just would be, they'd have to wait until you sold it to collect that money.
They can't tell you to move out of the house. I mean, they do tell you, but you don't have to move out of that house until the foreclosure process has gone all the way through and you've lost in court, and it's been sold at the courthouse,
right?
Down on Punch Bowl for most of them, and then it has a confirmation hearing even after that.
Then they still have to get a what is called a writ of possession.
So go back through that again. Once you get your foreclosure, if you would.
Once you have a complaint for foreclosure, you've got the 20 days to answer.
Okay.
All right. If you don't answer, then they can move for an entry of default.
Okay.
And that default needs to be set aside. If it's not set aside, then the bank will move forward and go with a motion for summary judgment. Now, with the motion for summary judgment, all the bank needs to show was that there was a note. What are the terms of the note? There has been a default on the note, which means that the homeowner failed to pay on the note. And there's notice. That's the important part. The notice has gone out from the bank to the homeowner that you are in default and we intend to accelerate the terms of the note and you need to pay in order to cure that default. And if that's not cured, then they file their motion for summary judgment and you need to defend against that. And some of the defenses is that you're not the holder. The bank has no standing because there are breaks in the chain of title. And that's where the foreclosure mills try to remedy that by producing at a time far beyond when the foreclosure proceedings or the notice of default has been issued. What is called an assignment of mortgage. And that's the document that's the greatest suspect as for a foreclosure defense attorney. Because these assignment of mortgages are usually drafted by the foreclosure mills. And that is where the robo-signing issues come about. And these issues, unfortunately, are not necessarily addressed on the onset at the motion for summary judgment. Because for some reason, the courts will look at the declaration of the servicer.
And the attorney,
right? The attorney affirmation that says they've reviewed all of these documents and they're all true and correct and I have personal knowledge. All right, well, fine. You know, I look at that and say, okay. But, of course, and so do the courts, unfortunately. But there are rules of evidence. You need to have these documents authenticated. They need to be genuine. You've got to have the, under the business records exception, you've got to have the custodian of records to say that this is, in fact, truth and this is the accurate document and the proper player signed off. And there's a lot of things that needs to be shown, but at the summary judgment stage, for some reason, they are not shown. And that is where the biggest objection comes in from a foreclosure defense standpoint. And then if it's granted by the court, then you've got to move for a motion for reconsideration, which in my experience, it's hard to get. Any changes because, of course, the court said we've already ruled, so why should we change our ruling? Then you've got to file a notice of appeal and go forward with the appellate proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an uphill battle. But if you are so far into it and you haven't defended from the beginning, then it makes it even much more difficult. And it's all there. I mean, it's all there. They've consented to a judgment. We just got to go and find out where all the evidence is so that we can turn this all around and the homeowners can be put in the proper position where they should be. And
are there entities out there actively suppressing your efforts? I mean, not just waiting till you take it to court, but are there challenges such as that where, you know...
The answer is yes.
And
remember,
in what form?
Remember, we're dealing with banks that have a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
right? And they're all about money. It used to be that we could, the part of what you're looking there is you're seeing screens in that forensic mm-hmm. audit report I gave you from Bloomberg. And it used to be that lots of people could go on Bloomberg and look that up. Now, it did cost you $2,000 a month on a two-year subscription to do that. But they gave that to lots of you. Any of us could go pick up that subscription if we wanted to pay for that.
Right.
And Bloomberg had a search engine that would allow you to search fairly easily to find out where that mortgage is. The banks pressured Bloomberg. This happened, 8 months ago or something. They pressured Bloomberg, and Bloomberg pulled the search engine so that you couldn't easily go find these things. And they canceled a whole lot of subscriptions for people that were primarily doing forensic audits on it. So, yes, there's a lot of stuff out there. For that matter, you can tell that I'm not, even though I work with them and we stay nice with them but all the time, I'm not a big fan of the major lenders. There's probably some reason why some people have written about them being the evil empire along the way. So I didn't say that, but
mm-hmm.
but I can understand why people do. Let me give you one quick example. We have a case in court right now that's being foreclosed on. Bank of America says that they're the owner of the note. Bank of America filed an affidavit that said that they own the note and they've been the servicer for it along the way. They have an assignment of the mortgage to Bank of America,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, a few months before they started their foreclosure action, they wrote the lender and said, no, we don't own this note. It's owned by Freddie Mac. If you go on Freddie Mac's website, you can look it up. And Freddie Mac says, yes, we've owned this note since 2007. Now, I would suggest to you that the documents that were sent by Bank of America and the attorney based their affidavit on those documents are fraudulent. But they said, you know, they did it. So here we are in court trying to get, they've got a summary judgment motion going. We're trying to defeat the summary judgment motion. And part of the defense there is that they actually don't own this note. They're not the real party in interest, so they shouldn't be doing this foreclosure at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there also is the same thing that she brought up in terms of the affidavit to transfer of the mortgage, right? Those assignments on that mortgage over there, the individual who did this one went to a handwriting expert in California, and we have three or four examples of these transfers all signed by this same person, and all the signatures are very different. Has the same name underneath them, sometimes a different company, but the signatures are different.
There was a robo.
That's part of what the robo-signing is. So the fact that the lender says that everything's in order and they actually own the note and all that's in order, they ought to be able to go ahead and foreclose. They don't always tell the truth. They fabricate things in order to make the foreclosures easy because most foreclosures just happen. Of the 300 foreclosures filed, maybe 10 or 15 somebody will object to. The rest of them just go ahead and go through.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, Melody, anything? We're coming down to the last couple of minutes. Anything real quick?
Well, that's the crux of all of it, having the standing for the banks to foreclose on your property. And that is our major defense. And that's because there are problems in the chain of title. There are gaps. The note has been sold. The mortgage has been sold. They've been fractionalized, put in tranches. Hard to find where the who has actual standing for being the holder in due course of the note. That's the whole crux of the national mortgage settlement and all of the fraud and falsities that these banks have done. And we're seeing almost weekly now individual banks coming up with humongous settlements Yes. Absolutely. Maybe we just see one Bank of America, and before that,
J.C. Morgan Chase filed a settlement here last week. $8.6 billion, I think, is what it was. There were settlements in January this year. There were two or three of them. 12 banks participated in a 10-point-something settlement in January of this year. And then Bank of America had two other settlements, one where they agreed to pay Fannie Mae $3 billion in cash and take back another $6 billion worth of loans that they sold them that weren't very good loans. So there's a lot of that they're doing to try to get out from underneath that. Now, maybe what we ought to do here at the end, if you don't mind, we probably ought to give our phone numbers again one more time.
Go ahead.
My number is 537-4111. That's 537-4111. And if I can do anything to help. And, guys, if you're behind on your payments or your mortgage is too high, you're having difficulty there, or if you have a 6% or more mortgage interest rate on it, then you probably ought to come in and talk about a loan modification to make that more so it works better for you along the way. And we're glad to sit down and talk with you. It doesn't cost anything to come in and see either one of us along the way. Melody's number is?
My number is 258-8889. Now, I do not do HAMP or loan modifications, but I am a very strong supporter of the certified forensic loan audits. I do want to see where your chain of title of your mortgage, where it is at, and see what options you have available. So if you are interested in seeing where what options you have, do give me a call, because there's two ways that I'd like to be of assistance, and one is as plaintiff's attorney, and we can follow up with the National Mortgage Settlement, or as defense counsel in if you are faced with a foreclosure. My number again is 258-8889. That's also my cell phone, so you can text me or you can reach me via email. And my email address is adujalaw@gmail.com, adujalaw@gmail.com. Thank you.
All right. You know, one other thing we didn't mention real quick is I am a certified securitized forensic auditor of mortgage loans. I've taken those classes and got that little certificate that says that part. So that's why we're able to look through some of these things. We're able to go find out what's going on with a person's note and who really owns it. Because in most of the cases out there, the person who you're sending your payments to does not own your note. So we're both here willing to help anybody if they're in any of these situations that we've talked about.
All righty. Well, thank you, guys, Melody Aduha and Courtney Brown. Courtney is, again, from Hawaii Homeowners Solution, 537-4111, Melody Aduha, 258-8889. So thanks again for joining me and joining the Carol Cox Show. Again, you can pick this up at podcasts at carolcox.com, CarolCox.com. And I want to say aloha to Celeste and her family, and we're with you, and hope to see you soon. And next week, we're going to be talking about DLNR and talking about the Beach Boys, and there's some very heated issues down there at Ala Moana, and the state's proposing to change laws where they don't want to enforce it, basically. They just want to continue to collect the money. Well, you know what that means. And we're going to talk about this DLNR and its ability to function only on $540,000 while cutting back, by the way. There are no activities or enforcement after 6 o'clock, by the way. All of you know that now. All you poachers just go out there, and it's all yours, just for the asking. While this is all happening, Randy Awol still travels to Maui on weekends on many occasions because that's where his home is, and Mr. Isla let him do that. So, again, all poachers, listen up. If you want to rape and pillage, anything you want to now, at 6 o'clock, DLNR. And I have the actual email that they sent out telling the officers not to bother to go out, cancel all that. So, hey, Neil is a real deal. My friend Neil Abercrombie was a friend of the environment. Somewhere along the way, he lost it. there is absolutely no way you can operate a law enforcement entity in a full state for $540,000. So where is the fraud? Anyway, we'll talk next week, but we have lots, and we're going to talk about a situation where boats are supposed to be out patrolling, but the boys are sitting around sleeping and eating and waiting for their second job. We got the proof right here, folks, pictures and all. So we'll talk to you next week. Join us on the Carol Cox Show. Aloha.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.